We're going to turn in our Bibles today to Psalm 34. We'll begin by reading the psalm together. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make her boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear thereof and be glad. O magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord, and he heard me, and delivered me from all my fears. They looked on him and were lightened, and their faces were not ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him, and saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encampeth around about them that fear him, and delivereth them. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him. O fear the Lord, ye his saints, for there is no want to them that fear him. The young lions do lack and suffer hunger, but they that seek the Lord shall not want any good thing. Come, ye children, hearken unto me, I will teach you the fear of the Lord. What man is he that desireth life and loveth many days, that he may see good? Keep thy tongue from evil and thy lips from speaking guile. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and his ears are open unto their cry. The face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. The righteous cry, and the Lord heareth, and delivereth them out of all their troubles. The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth him out of them all. He keepeth all his bones, not one of them is broken. Evil shall slay the wicked, and they that hate the righteous shall be desolate. The Lord redeemeth the soul of his servants, and none of them that trust in him shall be desolate. Amen. And we know that the Lord will add his blessing to that reading from his word. There are something like 14 psalms that contain a heading which refers to incidents in King David's life. And three of those relate to him being in a cave. We've already looked at Psalm 142 under the heading Praying from the Cave. We've also looked at Psalm 57 under the heading Singing from the Cave. And today I want us to think about Psalm 34 under this heading Testifying from the Cave. Now, these three psalms came out of a cave situation, a situation in David's case of self-isolation, where he was hiding. Today, we're going to look at Psalm 34, and the title of which connects it with the cave of Adullam. It doesn't say that it was written in the cave, but the title says things which connect us with that incident. It says, a psalm of David when he changed his behaviour before Abimelech, who drove him away, and he departed. And that connects us with the record that we find in 1 Samuel chapter 21 from verse 10 to the end of the chapter, and then into chapter 22 as far as verse 2. Now, in the historical record of 1 Samuel, the person mentioned by name is not Abimelech, but is Achish, the Philistine king of Gath. And then you might think, well, are we right to tie it back to that? Are we correct to think that it relates to David's time at Adullam? Well, many Bible men had more than one name for different reasons. However, it seems to be more common when it comes to kings or rulers. And one possible reason is that they are sometimes referred to by their dynastic name, the dynasty of a certain king. For example, the pharaohs of Egypt. Quite often all we read is, and pharaoh, but of course each pharaoh had a name. The same with the Caesars of Rome. Quite often we just read Caesar, but there were many Caesars. And also with the Herods of Israel, you'll quite often just find, and Herod said, but of course there were a number of Herods even in the short time that covered the life of the Lord Jesus. And Abimelech seems to have been the name of several Philistine kings. So we can conclude that Abimelech in the title of Psalm 34 is the same as the Achish of 1 Samuel, because all the other details fit, and this can be applied when we consider that Abimelech was probably a dynasty name. And the details tell us that this psalm records the period immediately after David's departure from Achish, king of Gath, and he then immediately fled to the cave. So he's testifying in Psalm 34 from the cave. Now this is such a positive psalm that it's hard to believe that David could steady himself enough to be able to think and reason the way he does. Of course, it may have been some time before he actually penned the words, but they certainly describe the personal discoveries that he made during that period. And what were those discoveries? Well, we could sum it up into one statement. And if you get nothing else out of this message, listen carefully to this statement. If we come to Psalm 34 and compare it with the details that we read in 1 Samuel, then the positives outweigh and transcend the negatives. The positives outweigh and transcend the negatives. Of course, for the believer, this is always the case. Oh, we don't always recognize that, but it's always the case. And to listen to some of us, you'd think that that wasn't so. But for the believer in Jesus, the positives of the Christian life and future always outweigh and transcend any negatives. If we quickly compare the confident statements in the psalm with the actual events of 1 Samuel, we'll see this, for example, Psalm 34, verse 8. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed or happy is the man that trusteth in him. But when we go to the record in 1 Samuel, we read of David certainly experiencing genuine physical hunger, a physical hunger that drove him to accept bread from the holy place when he ran in desperation to the tabernacle just before he goes to Achish, king of the Philistines. So when we think about that negative, he then directs us to a wonderful positive. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. We find another case of this. Because of David's human fear, he also commandeered the sword of Goliath, which was being kept there at the tabernacle where he had run to. It was sort of being revered and held as a relic there in that sacred place. He had no weapon, and he felt as a man of war, he felt naked without a weapon. And yet in Psalm 34, verse 7, we read this. The angel of the Lord encampeth around about them that fear him, and delivereth them. So the great negative was that he had no weapon, and the best he could do was to recover the sword of Goliath. And yet he points us in the psalm away from that history to a reality. The angel of the Lord. That transcends, that outweighs the negative that he felt. Also in the history of 1 Samuel, David was acutely aware that his every move was being watched by Saul's assassins. And what a negative that was. And yet, in Psalm 34, verse 15, he's conscious of other eyes being on him. And this is what he writes. The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous. Yes, there was a great negative, a great reality that was a negative. But somehow he's able to pick out and see a greater transcending positive. The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous. His enemy seemed to be hot on his heels whenever he, wherever he turned, according to 1 Samuel. And yet, in Psalm 34, beginning of verse 18, he's able to say, the Lord is near. In fact, it's a wonderful verse. The whole of the verse says, "The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart." Have you a broken heart today? "And saveth such as be of a contrite spirit." Yes, the enemy might have been hot on his heels within grasp. That's a negative. But he's able to see a greater positive. The Lord is near. The Lord is even nearer. You know, another negative is that he would have been in the silence and solitude of a cave, where the only voice he heard was his own voice echoing back. And yet he repeatedly points to a more wonderful positive. He's not just speaking to his own echo. Verse 4, "I sought the Lord and he heard me." Verse 6, "This poor man cried and the Lord heard him." Verse 15, "The ears of the Lord are open." And verse 17, "The righteous cry and the Lord hears." So many of the negatives of David's actual, factual, historical experience as recorded in 1 Samuel are given a corresponding positive in Psalm 34, enabling him to reach this conclusion. That's actually how the psalm begins. "I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make her boast in the Lord." There's the testifying. "Oh, magnify the Lord with me." He's able to testify from the cave because of the discoveries he has made. The positives that he has discovered in the Lord outweigh and transcend all the negatives that he is really feeling. How are you handling your situation today, whatever that situation is? How are you handling lockdown, self-isolation, social distancing? How are you handling that and the consequences of it? Is it all about the negatives? Or are you seeing that in the Lord, you still, as a believer in Jesus, have positives that far outweigh and transcend any negative that you could possibly experience at this moment in time? How are you testifying from your cave? Well, we'll think about one of these maybe a wee bit more than others. And it's the idea or theme of fear. It was very real to David. And as we thought about those wonderful opening verses, it comes down very quickly to this. "I sought the Lord and he heard me," verse 4, "and delivered me from all my fears." All, and fears plural, suggest that David had many, many, many reasons to be fearful. Many things made him afraid. What about you today? What are you afraid of? What are your fears? I'm sure if you're fearful, I'm sure there's not one. I'm sure there's a number of things. And they pile up, don't they? They stack up, they gang up against you. All my fears. And yet David goes then to a different fear. Fear him, verse 7. Fear the Lord, verse 9. The fear of the Lord, verse 11. He had very real fear of falling into the hands of Saul. He had just come across the path of Doeg, a servant of Saul, at the tabernacle. And he had fled to Gath, where he had come across Achish, the Philistine king. And, of course, the story started to be told in Achish's ears of who David was. And he had many, many reasons to be fearful. And yet, he sees a different fear. A positive fear, the fear of the Lord. The idea of fear there in verse 4 is carries with it the sense of terror, alarm and anxiety, all of these things that are interwoven into the idea of fear. We have fears. It's something that those who walk this earth will always experience, fear. There's fear of the inevitable. And of course, we realize from a very young age that certain things we do come with consequences. And we know that there are consequences. So there's the fear of the inevitable. The Bible talks about what a man sows, he will reap. And we know that. So there is a fear, of course, of the inevitable, the fear of being caught. And then, of course, there are tests and trials of life. And the Bible tells us that we are to expect such things. Think it not strange concerning the fiery trial that is to try you as though some strange thing happened unto you. We are to expect these things. Jesus said, I'm going to give you peace. But he says it in the context of, in the world you will have tribulation, trials. It's going to happen. So it's inevitable that these things will come. And then, of course, regardless of all those things that are kind of outside and come our way and come into us, there's the fears that we have within ourselves too, the fear of the aging process and what age brings, and the differences it makes to us physically and even mentally, the aging process. And ultimately, another inevitable thing is death. And all of these contain and are agents of fear. Fear of the inevitable. But then there's fear of the unknown. And I'm sure there are many people, perhaps somebody listening to this, who is fearful of their job security after the coronavirus has wrecked its worst. Or fear of economic recovery. Fear of what the housing market will be like after coronavirus. Maybe it's something more regular, like changing school or college. Or maybe medical appointments and being on a waiting list, and this has all been set back, and these are things that generate fear. Or perhaps you've had your procedure and there's a fear of the results. And our experience of fear is largely a negative one, certainly in those cases we've just mentioned. And that makes me think of what fear can do. And we see what fear can do in the story that we read of in 1 Samuel 21 and 22. David is being hounded by Saul. He's on the run. He has no food or weapons. He stops off at the tabernacle and asks the priest for bread and a sword. And the priest gave him of the showbread from the holy place and Goliath's sword, that historic artifact. But Saul finds out where David was at, and David goes back on the run again. And as he runs, he heads to Achish, the king of Gath. Now, this is an unimaginable decision. Imagine David doing such a thing, because this is the place where the giant came from, Goliath. This is where he had... There would be a knowledge of him and what he did to the champion of the Philistines. And this is giving us an idea of what fear can do. It can make us do things we wouldn't otherwise have done. Wonder, can you trace that in your life? And he goes to the Philistine king of Gath expecting to find sanctuary. But he overhears the king's servants counselling the king about the possible danger of harbouring such a high-profile fugitive as David was. 1 Samuel 21 and 11, they're heard to say, "Isn't this David of whom the Israelites sing, 'Saul has slain his thousands, but David has tens of thousands?'" So it would seem that on running from Saul, he's out of the frying pan, but he's into the fire. These are the kinds of things that fear can do. So in order to convince the king of Gath that he wasn't dangerous, David pretends to be insane. He starts to scrabbling on the door frames. He's foaming at the mouth. The spittle is falling down his beard. And King Achish falls for the impersonation that David's making. We see an evidence of this in the question that he asks his servants. He says to them, "Do I lack madmen that you have brought this one into my presence?" In other words, is there any shortage of madmen here that I need another one? And that's how David gets away from them and on the run again. And that's how he ends up then, the next step, in the cave of Adullam. But in acting before that pagan king as a madman, he was actually dishonouring Israel's God. Fear had done that. What fear can do. Fear caused him to even seek sanctuary amongst God's enemies. Fear caused him to rely on fleshly tactics. That was really deceit, wasn't it? Playing the madman in order to preserve his life. Fear steered him off course and took him into the way of his enemies. Fear weakened him. What fear can do. This is the youth who stood up to the giant. But look what fear has done to David. What do we fear? Or maybe we should put it another way. Who do we fear? Do we fear things or happenings or people more than God? David once feared God more than anything else. And he needed to pause in the cave to reset his focus. I wonder, has this pause in normal life for us been a time to reset our focus? Yes, human fears are real. And David's story confirms that. They are a force to be reckoned with. But that's just the negative side of fear. David discovered that the positives outweighed the negatives. And the positives transcend the negatives. Especially with fear. Because he then tells us of a positive fear. Verse 7. The angel of the Lord encampeth around about them that fear him. And he delivereth them. Verse 9. O fear the Lord, ye his saints, for there is no want to them that fear him. Verse 10. They that fear the Lord shall not want any good thing. This is all positive. And that's why in verse 11 he can say, "Come, listen to me, and I will teach you the fear of the Lord." Here is his testimony from the cave. He said, "This is what I've learned. I want to pass this on to you. This will benefit you." So the fear of the Lord is obviously a very different kind of fear. A positive fear. Many people throughout history, in order to survive in this world, have enjoyed the benefits of fire, and then of gas, and of electricity. Now, all of those things are in and of themselves dangerous. Each of those things are capable of great destruction. But used correctly, the rules being followed, handled with due respect, these power sources bring greater benefits. They're full of positive energy. They're helpful. They're life-sustaining. David makes a discovery in the cave. The positive fear of the Lord transcends all other fears. All those things we've mentioned, fire, gas, electricity, they're powerful. But our fear of them is not fear that makes us ignore them. But through history, people have embraced them, but using them correctly and respectfully. We have a God who's a consuming fire, yes. But we have a God who, when he is truly feared, respected, approached correctly, all the benefits that come from him to us. You know, the satisfaction that David finds in the Lord outweighs all other means of satisfaction. And that's why he could say, "Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him." Although there are many, many sources of satisfaction in the world around us, I wonder, have we forgotten about the satisfaction the Lord gives? I wonder, have we replaced the satisfaction he gives with what the world has to offer? I wonder, are we still excited to taste and see that the Lord is good? Oh, the protection that David finds in the Lord is greater than the protection of any cave or castle or weapon or army. It's the same for us. Verse 34, verse 7. The angel of the Lord encampeth around about them that fear him and delivereth them. This is like an encampment of angels, as much as the angel of the Lord encamping. There's the idea of greatness and vastness, the idea of scope, and anything else that we could form or look to or depend upon or trust in. Oh, it's transcended by, it's outweighed by the angel of the Lord encamping around about us. Do you know he's encamping around about you today? The comfort that David finds from the gaze of the Lord far outweighs the scrutiny of Saul and his sharpest assassins. Because David's able to write in Psalm 34 verse 15, the eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous. And the communion that David enjoys with the Lord diminishes the anxiety he would usually feel as the enemy comes ever closer. It seems to be everywhere he goes, the enemy's hot on his heels. It seems to be that all Saul's assassins have to do is reach out and they've almost got him. They're so close. It's almost tangible. And yet David's able to write about another closeness, a transcending closeness. Psalm 34 verse 18, the Lord is nigh. The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit. The Lord is near. The audience that David has with God, oh, the God of heaven, transcends the loneliness of that cavernous cave. Verse 4, I sought the Lord, and he heard me. Verse 6, this poor man cried, and the Lord heard him. Every negative in David's experience, as we can trace it in 1 Samuel, is given a corresponding positive in Psalm 34. You'd hardly think there was any connection between the two at all. David is able to testify from the cave to the keeping, comforting, protecting, satisfying, fear-dispelling, prayer-hearing power of God. That was his. That was a reality. That's what he's testifying to. And that is just as real for those of us who fear the Lord today, who are trusting in the Lord today, who are looking to the Lord today, who are seeing His greatness to be far above all the negativity that surrounds us and that we might feel, even the greatness of the fears that we might have. We can still testify to the keeping, comforting, protecting, satisfying, fear-dispelling, prayer-hearing power of God in our lives today. That causes David to testify and to use these words. Verse 11, come, children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Do you want the negatives in your current situation to fade? Well, then do like David. Embrace the greater positives and magnify the Lord with him, and together with him exalt his name. May the Lord bless these thoughts to all of our hearts for his name's sake.